We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning and welcome to the Morning Briefing for Wednesday, October 11th, 2017. I'm your host, Eric Dame. Jake Hughes is your producer, and on today's show, we'll be joined by the Assistant Director of Minority and Women's Outreach for the American Legion, and Chris Isleeb of the World War I Centennial Commission is going to tell us about what they have coming up in October and their brand new coin that has just been announced. But first,
you might recognize our next guest best from his time on Fox's reality show, American Grit, where he was one of the stars of the second season. But John Burke, he's more than that. John is a war veteran and former infantry drill sergeant. He enlisted in the United States Army at the age of 17 and was deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan for three tours. So how does somebody get from Iraq and Afghanistan to being on national television? Well, who better to ask than John Burke himself? John, good morning, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Morning. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
So, as I mentioned, you enlisted in the Army at 17. Tell us a little bit about your service, where you were, and what you did during the time that you served.
I joined up when I was 17. I had some troubles at home. Figured the Army was the best way for me to get out and see the world. Wound up getting stationed in Germany, 1st Armored Division, back in 2002. Deployed to the invasion of Iraq in 2003. Spent 17 months there having fun. Came home. Wound up going back with the 504th. Did a 17-month tour with the, or excuse me, 15-month tour with the Surge. Came back, went to the 101st, did an 11-month tour over in Afghanistan. The entire time I was infantry, came back, got assigned to go be a drill sergeant at Fort Benning, training young infantry recruits. Then got assigned to go be an SGL at the Fort Stewart Non-Commissioned Officers Academy, and that's where essentially social media kind of became prevalent in my life and allowed me to have business opportunities on the outside of the military that I decided to pursue. And it's brought me to where I am now, which ultimately led to me being on American Grit.
So, John, looking back to the time when you exited the Army after serving for all those years and serving as a drill sergeant, serving in Afghanistan and in Iraq, what sticks out to you the most from leaving the service, that transition time from active duty to veteran? Is there anything that you remember that you wish you'd known about ahead of time or anything that was more difficult for you when you get out than it should have been?
Well, I definitely had the benefit of I've gotten out before. After my first tour to Iraq, I left the military service because I felt like the woman I was with at the time didn't want me to stay in because of numerous deployments coming down the pipe. So I got out. I was 20 years old. I thought everything was going to be hunky-dory. You know, I didn't really set myself up for success on the outside. I didn't have my education. And then I came to realize that, hey, guess what? Civilian employers, unless you're educated, unless you've got some kind of marketable business skill that they can use, they're not going to hire you simply because you're a veteran, for the most part, from what I experienced. So the second time I got out, I was prepared. I'd already had my associate's degree. I managed to knock that out as a drill sergeant, but I also had a plan set into place. I had two plans set into place before I got out that should this not work out, I can go to plan B as far as having a job. As an entrepreneur, it's highly advised that you have multiple streams of income in case one opportunity or one business fails. You know, your bills are still being paid by another stream of income. But it was just this the second time I was ready for it. I didn't make any mistakes. I had all my I's dotted, T's crossed, and the transition was actually easy financially. Now psychologically, it's taken some time. I've been out for almost 2 years, and there's still an adjustment phase going on. I mean, I still feel it. I realize it because at first I was like, no, I'll be fine. I can adjust to my environment very easily, and for the most part, I have. But there are certain things that come back as far as just a sense of purpose, a sense of motivation, a sense of what's my goal here. And it kind of eats at you sometimes. But ultimately, it's been a lot better the second time around.
Well, yeah, I would imagine that having gone through it once, were there any specific lessons that you learned the first time that you think made it that much easier the second time? Does anything stick out to you?
It does, but didn't apply the second time. The first time was understanding that you cannot go in there with the military mentality and work for a civilian workforce. You can't sit there and say the mission comes first and disregard safety sometimes. Safety, OSHA, for example, does not smile on people that violate its standards. regardless if you're doing it simply because you want to get the mission done or because you just don't want to listen. So the first time I came to understand that, you've got to realize that civilians have a much different approach to getting things done as to the military. Military is like, it's going to get done no matter what. Civilians, it's not the case sometimes. The second time I got out, though, I never went to work for a civilian company. I do my own thing now, so it doesn't really apply. But it was one of those that, you know, to encourage other veterans to understand that, number one, if you got out in a leadership role, you might not be a leader again. You might have to start back over at the bottom of the totem pole. Number two, understanding how corporate America works, understanding that you just can't go in there and start dropping F-bombs. And again, I've been very fortunate enough to have my own company, do my own things where I can do basically whatever I want. But again, if I was to go back and do it again, I would understand that facet of it, as far as you just can't go in there and talk like you're in the field, act like you're in the field. You've got to represent yourself as a true professional in all aspects.
Right. And we're speaking with John Burke. John is an Army veteran, former drill sergeant, served in Iraq, served in Afghanistan, and served on Fox TV's American Grit, the second season of that TV show. So, John, you know, you get out of the military, and how does it end up that you're on national TV with WWE superstar John Cena such a short time later? How did that come to be?
Well, one thing I've learned in this game, in this business, is that networking is the key ingredient to having new business ventures put your way, sent your way. So I had went with a friend to promote a new video called Operation Chromite back then. And I flew out to L.A., went to this video premiere, helped him out. And it's for a good cause. You know, it was for Korean War veterans. Their stories definitely do not get told enough. So I did this. And then I came back 2 months later. This guy says, hey, I got a part for you that you might be interested in. And he brought up American Grit. I'd never seen it. I didn't really know much about John Cena. I'm not a WWE fan. I don't watch any of the stuff. But he said, it's American Grit Season 2. So I went and I YouTubed American Grit Season 1. I was like, well, I'll tell you right now, I'm not in good enough shape to compete on something like that. I'd have to have like a few months train-up time. And he said, no, you'd be cadre. You'd be training them. I was like, oh, well, that I'm interested in. So they interviewed 2,000 people for the cadre positions. And I didn't know any of this. I didn't know how the whole thing worked. They called me on Skype for about an hour, and the next day they called me back and said I got the part. They asked me several different questions in regards to, like, how would you react to this scenario? What would you do for this? And it was just me being honest and upfront, man. If that's the one thing I could tell people out there, is just to be yourself. Unless yourself is a jerk, then don't be a jerk. But be who you are. Be what you believe. You know, don't change your perspective just to appease people or just to appease society. And I was very shocked. I mean, I'll get it down to the nitty-gritty. I'm a libertarian, more right-leaning conservative. And we all know in Hollywood that unless you're a liberal, good luck getting work. So I was actually kind of shocked they allowed me to be on the show with my political beliefs. And they were for it. So for a month and a half of October to December of 2016, we were in Hampton Island, Georgia, right outside of Savannah. And we filmed American Grit Season 2. And I was actually roommates with Cena for that entire time, and I learned a lot about him. We'd have a lot of long conversations regarding politics, business ownership, personal things, and I, honest to God, don't have one bad thing to say about the man. He's genuine, he's humble, he's driven, and he's very intelligent.
And he seems like one of those guys who's always been very supportive of the military and the veteran community. And I think it kind of shows with that show, which I've been able to catch a few episodes of over the first and second season. Of course, the second season featured John Burke, who we're speaking to right now, a former Army drill sergeant, Iraq and Afghanistan veteran, and currently an entrepreneur. And you weren't the only veteran on that show. I believe there were four or five of you who were part of the coaching team, as it were, on American Grit. How did that work out? Did you get along with your fellow? I know there was one other soldier on there with you, a couple other Marines. Were you guys able to work together? Was there more competition?
No, we definitely worked together. We made a point to say that at the end of every day, we would sit down and have a beer and, you know, discuss our issues. And again, let me preface it with, none of this was scripted. Everybody, you know, I went into this like, look, I understand reality TV. Everybody knows it's not reality. Well, I told the producers of the show, like, I'm not doing anything fake. It's got to be genuine. It's got to be real. And they were very understanding. Now, they did give us tidbits to discuss. So we'd be sitting in a circle because we had to shoot the scene and say, okay, talk about this and how you feel. So they'd say, you know, do the lead in for episode two, if you will. Say, okay, so so-and-so's been eliminated. How does that make you feel? John, start. So I would just say it. I would open it up, and then we'd just discuss naturally. So they were guiding us to an extent, but it was all real. It was all speaking our minds. Now, Ricky and Chloe were Marines. Grady was Special Forces Green Beret. And all of us, we got along. It was, we did have our run-ins, naturally, all leadership is.
Right.
But it was just, it was a great experience. But, yeah, Grady and I definitely had a lot of run-ins. We had several disagreements as how to play the game, if you will. But I have nothing but love for Grady. Grady's a good guy. He caught a lot of flack over this. A lot of people, like, outright hate him. It's like, look, you got to understand that he brought a different dynamic to the show. He made it much more difficult for the other teams. And he was just—he was Shady Grady, man. He played the game, so I'll give him props for that. But as far as everybody always asks me, "Do you hate Grady?" It's like, no, I don't hate Grady. Grady's a good guy.
And the top five finishers from that show coming from your team and Grady's team on American Grit Season 2, which aired on Fox, starring, of course, the WWE superstar John Cena and our guest right now, John Burke, who is a former Army drill sergeant, tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, and featured on Season 2 of American Grit. Is that something that's going to continue for you? I know they had a new staff, essentially, of coaches for the teams from Season 1 to Season 2. So is it more just a one-season type of deal?
I'm not 100% sure. Actually, I am. I'm just not at liberty to say right now. I gave them my word I wouldn't. All I can say is that I am working with the same production company, and some other things are coming up here soon as far as creative meetings to discuss future opportunities in regards to reality television. But as far as American Grit, I don't believe I'll be returning, no.
All right. Well, John, you are also working on a lot more. I mean, people may think like, oh, he's a TV star now. He did a season of American Grit. There you are. But there's a lot more going on in the world of John Burke. So tell us a little bit about of what takes up your day-to-day life these days.
Well, the VA, the Veteran Affairs, has been a big issue within the veteran community. And I've had numerous charities and people reach out to want to partner up and essentially just use my platform that I've created via social media to help push their agenda, and not a negative connotation at all. And the thing was, I got tired of dealing with that. I got tired of having to vet people, ensure their charities are on the up and up. And then I started seeing reports of these VAs, the VAs in Phoenix, the VA in Durham. And it got so aggravating that I started writing hit piece articles on these VAs. And the one thing that shocked me was, like, if I'd have a veteran come forward and say that this VA has done this, and I wrote, you know, I do some digging, I do some investigating, find it to be true, write an article, that VA suddenly, you know, comes to attention and squares that veteran away. And that opened my eyes to the reality of how powerful social media influencers can be in regards to making a change for the good. So what I wound up doing is I created an organization called Stand To. And I go around highlighting malpractices and things on behalf of the VA. And I do it in a very, initially it was an attacking manner. I'd go after them full force. I'd call for the resignation of a few people. Of course, on several occasions it hasn't happened because I just don't have that kind of power yet. But it's going to be one of those things that when you rally the troops against a good cause, of people that are abusing their positions, that are abusing their authority and mistreating veterans and not giving veterans the care they deserve, then it's kind of like, you know, rally the mob and let's go after them. So it was more along the lines of educated editorials written in that manner, and then highlighting issues within the VA that I felt was damaging and crippling the VA, such as a union. We had the Federal Protection Act as far as employees being protected that were actually toxic, that should have been fired. Trump comes along and now removes it, to where VA directors can now fire federal employees on the spot, which has been a big help. So it's helping influence change from a social media level to try and hold the VAs more responsible and to make them understand, like right now, I've been to two VAs on my missions and stuff, and they know who I am. I announce when I'm coming, and they know exactly who I am and what I'm bringing with me. And one of them has been wonderful to work with. It was the Phoenix VA. They welcomed me. They allowed me to tour the facility. We spoke with the assistant VA director. A lot of people, they came to a town hall meeting. So it kind of changed in the mission of Attack the VA to host the town hall meeting at that VA's location and bring veterans together to talk and discuss issues with that VA and their administration and what they're getting and what they need and some things. It's kind of like, think of it like an AAR, an after actions review, and establish communication, establish a dialogue between the veterans and the VA so they can work together at fixing what they're dealing with. And then having the VA also explain what they're dealing with at the congressional level as far as getting the help they need to change for the better. So it's highlighting the good, it's highlighting the bad. I'm trying to take a neutral standpoint on it when I can, but if the VA is at fault, then I'm going after them. So here in the next few weeks. I'm flying up to Chicago. This is strictly nonprofit. It's a 501c3. Not one penny of it goes into my own personal bank account. I do it through a different charity. They have access to the funds. I'm simply reimbursed for travel funds that I pay out of pocket for, because there are a lot of charities out there that the payment that you make, not all that money is going to charity. And I understand they have to pay a staff, but a lot of charities out there have given us such a bad name from spending or misspending or mismanagement of funds. And I definitely did not want to have that on my conscience. So I made it known to the world that, hey, I have no access to these funds. It's all to the charity. They're the ones reimbursing. But the next mission's up in Chicago. We've got a young 101st Airborne kid, 23 years old, was in a vehicle wreck, paralyzed from the neck down now. He's only receiving 6 hours of nurse care from the VA. And we go up there and try and do an interview with him and see if that VA, the Hines VA in Illinois, will work on getting him more hourly care, because right now he has so many things that have to be done from a nurse's professional experience that his parents can't do. And his parents are out of work because they're taking care of him full-time, what they can, and they're accruing more and more debt. So if they can get more hourly care from the nurses, they can get a job and financially be able to support themselves. So it's trying to go out there and spread the word about these veterans like that and just help as many as I can. So there's Stand2, there's itagear.com, the merchandise that I design here. I do fitness online training. I have about 5 clients, and then I have 80 clients in a Facebook group that I run for the ITA Elite. And then I work with Integrity Driven Nutrition Supplement Company. I work with Icon Meals. I do a lot of social media advertising for companies that I actually believe in. And as of now, I'm kicking off a motivational speaking tour coming up in San Antonio November 9th and for Veterans Day weekend. And there's a lot of things. I do speaking engagements around the world. I had to hire a manager. They're taking care of me there because the emails just come flooding in and they have to filter out what's legit and what's not. So there's a lot on the plate, and I won't even lie to you, man. Sometimes it's feast or famine. Sometimes I have like a week with nothing on the schedule, and then there's weeks coming up like the one starting today that I'll be on the road. It's just nonstop for the next 2 weeks. So I'm blessed. I'm not complaining whatsoever. Did I ever see it going this way? Absolutely not. It's just been a roller coaster ride that I'm very appreciative to have, because there's a lot of people out there that aren't as fortunate as I am.
And as you mentioned, you're going to be appearing in San Antonio, also Spokane, Washington, I believe. And people can find out all about this by going to the John Burke Facebook page. And one thing that they might notice, 500,000 people have liked that John Burke Facebook page. You are a social media influencer. And when it comes to veterans who are interested in trying to make a difference through social media, how would you recommend they try going about building that kind of following where you end up having hundreds of thousands of people who you know you're going to be able to get the information that you want out to?
The biggest advice I could give to anybody as far as growing a social media platform is that you've got to be yourself. You've got to be original. Content is key. Your content has to be the driving force of how you grow your channel. But the first thing I'd suggest, you start a public figure page. Not your private one. Start a public figure page. Start an Instagram page. Have it as your name because you are the brand. And then be authentic and be genuine, but also ask yourself, what makes you any different than anybody else trying to do the exact same thing? Me, I pushed in a drill sergeant style when it came to motivational videos. When it came to politics, I handled it in a different manner. But you've got to understand that you've got to stay true to yourself, but be creative, be authentic, but be different. And it's kind of like saying, be dry, but be wet, if that makes any sense. But it's a difficult thing, man. I'm not going to lie. It's a double-edged sword. You post these videos, I've had videos go millions and millions of views, and you try and read comments, because then if you don't, people say you don't interact with your following. And then when you do, you tend to focus on the negative comments. There's a lot of trolls out there. I've got a lot of hatred from the veteran community, from certain veterans out there that disagree with me from a political standpoint, or they accuse me of being a sellout, or whatever the case may be. You've got some people out there that I call them vet flakes. They're nothing but crybaby veterans that have never done anything good for their lives. They were probably a disgruntled E4 that got out of the military and hated the Army, and they want everybody to be just as miserable as them. And they hate me for, number one, my ambition, my drive. I want to be successful, and I want to be remembered. And you've got these people out there that are going to try and hold you back at every corner that you turn. They're going to try and bring you down. They're going to try and say whatever they can. I've been accused of stealing money from charities to just all manner of things that it's like, wow, you just never realize that veterans could do that to other veterans, and it's sad to see. So be ready when you start the social media channel to take some hits. They're going to people will come after you. They will try and discredit you. They will try and bring you down to the dirt. And that's why you always got to remember that Man in the Arena speech that I started my brand from, which is the Theodore Roosevelt quote from Man in the Arena, that it's not the critic that counts. So if you're not a critic, you know, if you don't have time to sit there and watch other people do their, you know, do their thing, that's good. It means you're doing your thing. I don't have time to sit there and critique other people as far as how they live their lives, as far as how they dress, how they act, how they talk. It's just one of those things that if you're too busy worrying about your own success, you're not going to worry about other people's and what they're doing. And so that's another thing that I encourage veterans to do as far as the fitness realm. Like right now, we're at an 81% obesity rate within the veteran community. You tack on issues of PTSD, hypervigilance, paranoia, depression. Now you throw in obesity, and it's a concoction of why we have so many suicides today, because it's just one culminating thing of just this horrible feeling. And veterans, it seems to be like we're very adamant that as soon as we get out, we're not doing PT ever again. But while we were in, we ate and we drank like crap, but we get out and we stop doing PT and our eating behaviors remain the same, and then we blow up and get fat, we become obese. So it's a message to veterans also of take care of your body. You take care of your body, it'll take care of you. Healthy body equals a healthy mind, meaning you ain't got to go out there and ruck 10 miles, but go to the gym and take care of yourself. Do PT in the morning. And that's another message. And I've had so many great responses from veterans that go out there and they do the exact same thing. It's like, man, I miss it. And they get back into it and they feel so much better. And the message also applies to civilians. You know, I'm not just for veterans, for civilians as well. I do, especially law enforcement. My wife is a Dallas law enforcement officer here in Dallas. She's a detective dealing with child exploitations. So I see the stories or I hear the stories of, that she deals with, the police departments deal with. And I try and stand up for them as well, because I know they've come under a lot of fire during the Obama administration, which I felt was unjust. And I started seeing all these things via the press and said, someone's got to stand up for these guys. This isn't right. And so I made videos on that and they went viral and people didn't like me because I was pro-police. And then they brought the race issue into it. And so it's very finicky. Social media is a very finicky thing. And now I'll get to the point where I'm starting to realize that people expect me to comment on certain things. It's like they're waiting for it. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm a nobody. I'm just a dude with a Facebook page. But it's like, what's your views on Charlotte? Why aren't you condemning racism? It's like, well, and this is my, you know, finicky stance. If it takes me, a regular dude, to come on social media and say, hey guys, racism is bad, for you to understand it's bad, you're an idiot. And I'm not holding back on stuff like that. That's why I feel people are social media sheep to an extent. That, you know, why didn't you talk about this? Because I didn't want to talk about it. Why didn't you comment on this is bad? Because it's common sense that hot water is hot. Don't play in traffic. Eat your vegetables. Don't talk to strangers. And racism is bad. If you're just that stupid, you know, then you really shouldn't be following me. And I think that's also what makes me different as well. I don't sugarcoat things. I'm not going to sit there and play around people's feelings because they're so tenderhearted. Right. If you want to follow me, then follow me. You know, whenever I have new followers that come on, they say, I'm new to your channel. It's like, well, give me a minute because I'll get to you and I'll offend you here in a second somehow, just by truth. I always try and say that, you know, people say, what political side are you on? I say the side of the truth. That's where I follow is truth. And when people don't like that, I'm very anti-obesity glorification. I'm not for that movement. I'm not sitting here condoning body love, because body love should be used in a fashion of burns, stretch marks, things that you don't have control over, versus glorifying obesity of people's lazy eating habits. And I'll have to also caveat off of that people that are, you know, not affected with a medical condition such as hypothyroidism, hypothyroidism, medications that cause weight gain, versus someone out there just making an excuse. So I have to throw that in there because people will take that and they'll twist it. They'll twist my words that, well, he just hates all fat people. I don't hate anybody. I hate the way you live your life. Right. I think it's disgusting. I wish you'd be healthy for yourself and have a better quality of life. So I made videos on that wound up getting me on the TV show, The Doctors, defending myself against a panel of doctors that didn't really agree with me. But it was actually kind of nice because I made those doctors kind of look foolish because they were trying to use a emotional scientific approach versus a logical one, which I went with. And it was just one of these things that it blew up around the world. I had people all over the world either really hating me or really loving me for saying the most common thing they say is he's telling it like it is. He's just doing it in a fashion that people don't like. And so that's what helped my social media channel blow up. Honestly, it was just doing it in my own fashion, my own approach. And it's been what worked for me.
And he is John Burke, Army veteran, former drill sergeant, Iraq and Afghanistan veteran, now a veteran of Fox TV's American Grit with John Cena, a man who has opinions, and that's part of the reason why he's become as successful as he is. And John, if people are interested in finding out more about those opinions and hearing your take on the next big thing that happens, where can they go to follow you on social media?
They can follow me on Facebook at John Burke, YouTube is John Burke, Instagram is John Burke 1, Twitter John Burke 1775. That's a mouthful, man.
Indeed it is, but hey, a mouthful of goodness, because John Burke, as I said, 500,000 followers on Facebook alone. He is a man who can show you how to do things the right way as far as gaining a social media following, as far as living a healthy life, and in so many other ways. John, we want to thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
And you are listening to The Morning Briefing here on CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting Vets every day. American Legion coming up after this.
Helping military veterans stay connected.
We make it easy.
We are CBS Radio's ConnectingVets.com. Connecting Vets every day.
Online and all over social media. Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Connecting Vets.
You haven't fallen into some sort of time machine wormhole type of deal. It's actually us playing Over There. One of the top songs from 100 years ago as the United States prepared to enter the fray that was World War I. Why are we playing that? Well, because this is the 100th anniversary of the United States' entry into the Great War. The war to end all wars, as they called it back then. Of course, that turned out to not so much be the case, but there are a lot of fascinating, interesting things, and World War I is one of them. It changed the world geopolitically, it changed borders, it changed just about anything that you can think of on a world stage. It was truly the first global conflict, and to some extent is not remembered as well as World War II, which happened just a few decades later. Part of that has to deal with the difference in media, of course, between the two eras. In 1917, well, you didn't have much radio broadcasting going on. In fact, no radio broadcasting going on at that point. World War II, you had the radio, you had film, you had so much more being captured, and it happened on such a larger scale that it has in many ways superseded World War I. But to forget World War I, yeah, that's foolish, because World War I is an incredibly important timepiece in American history and world history, and that's why Congress chartered the World War I Centennial Commission, who are basically running a slew of events around the country this entire year to remember that great war. And one of the members of that commission is Mr. Chris Islieb, who joins us live in studio right now. Chris, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. Thank you for hosting us.
Absolutely. Now, Chris, of course, himself is a veteran and has been working with the World War I Centennial Commission to promote the variety of events taking place around the country. And to give people just a bit of background on what the Centennial Commission does, the Centennial Commission isn't necessarily running all of these events. It's more about promoting the events that are happening. Isn't that right?
That's true. We have a small staff here in D.C. that was set up by Congress to do three things, really. One of them was to commemorate the veterans of the war through our own events and also to foster events. Another one is to educate the public, to create education partnerships, to create education programs. And then thirdly is to increase the national conversation, to do public outreach so people are aware, so those veterans are not forgotten.
And one of the things, and this is actually what Chris is here to talk to us about, that you guys have done to raise that awareness, is that there has been a recent announcement, and a pretty big one, involving a coin, the U.S. Mint, and the World War I Centennial Commission. So, Chris, tell us about this coin.
We're very fortunate. Not only was World War I a major historic event for the world, and also it brought so many new technologies and new developments in American life, but it touched so many people. It touched 4.7 million families. 4.7 million men and women stepped forward in uniform. And to that end, Congress, after they created us, they also saw an opportunity for us to work with U.S. Mint to create a commemorative coin. It's a collectible coin. So we worked with the U.S. Mint to create a design competition that they hosted, and then the Secretary of the Treasury from that open international competition selected what they thought would be the best representation. And so we unveiled with the U.S. Mint 2 days ago, the art design for that commemorative coin to honor those 4.7 million American veterans.
And of course, that was really the first war where the United States entered the world stage. The United States, considered by many to be kind of a backwater up until that point. We were just kind of over across the sea, again, over there, like the song says. We were the other version of over there. Our soldiers headed over there after being over here, which was a place that had, you know, I suppose grown in some ways, but until our entry into World War One, and then even more so in the closure of World War One with President Wilson, it really marked the U.S.'s entry onto that world political stage. Now, the coin itself, when we look at the design of it, how exactly would you describe? I mean, we have a soldier on the front. It looks like we have the poppies on the back. So where did the design come from, and what is the design specifically?
Yeah, all the artwork for your listeners can be found in two different places. The U.S. Mint has a special webpage set up at www.usmint.gov. And then we also have some other additional information as well as the artwork at our own website, www.cc.org/thecoin. And if you go there, you'll see the obverse of the coin represents a doughboy soldier. It that was the Navy and the Coast Guard and the Air Services were also very heavily involved. But the designer wanted to really use the iconic doughboy image, and so the obverse of the coin shows a doughboy who's in struggle. He's holding a rifle. He's got a stern look. On the back, the reverse of the coin is the symbolic remembrance poppy, which many veterans know as the veterans remembrance flower, which was a symbol that was created in World War One, mm-hmm. and it's intermingled with as if growing through barbed wire. And barbed wire, of course, is iconic from the trench warfare that was involved.
And the poppies, of course, have also become somewhat synonymous with the veterans of foreign wars. Their Buddy Poppy, that's one of their fundraisers where you'll see the VFW members selling the poppies at various places and events outside of malls, outside of baseball stadiums, all sorts of different places. And that flower holds a special place to the veterans of foreign wars. Of course, an organization that kind of grew out of World War One. We're speaking with Chris Islieb, who represents the World War One Centennial Commission, about the new coin. Now, this coin, here's the thing, Chris. A lot of people hear commemorative coin and they think, oh, this is like one of those things I'd see on TV where you get a coin and that's all it is. It's just a pretty coin. This is actually a silver dollar, isn't it? This is actually U.S. currency. Now, I'm not going to recommend anyone who's interested in it get it and then use it to go, you know, buy a lollipop or whatever you can do for $1 these days. But how did that come about and that decision to have it actually be a U.S. currency and not just a commemorative coin?
Well, it's a collectible. So there's going to be a number of different finishes that the U.S. Mint is going to produce. I am told from U.S. Mint, and they can speak better on this, that that whenever they print, they create such an authorized coin, it has to have a denomination on it. Now, that said, we see this really as a tangible way for people to be part of the centennial. This is the year, and next year are really the years that of 100th anniversary, 100th year of remembrance of your family members and of the people that you knew and descended from who served in this war, who gave so much. And so this is a tangible way for someone to, recognize that service and be part of what we're up to. Because the other thing is that there's a certain surcharge that the Mint is going to have as part of the price for the collectible coin. And that surcharge will goes to our Centennial Commission, our Congressional Commission, and we will use that for the building of the new National World War One Memorial here in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital.
And the coin itself, actually, you know, World War One, of course, being the first truly global conflict on such a large international scale involving so many nations, the coin itself has a bit of an international flair to it as well, as the design is the work of Leroy Transfield, who's actually born in New Zealand but lives in Utah. And how did the selection process go for the coin? I mean, were there various designs that were put in? Was he contracted to do it? I mean, where did the design actually originate out of?
The Mint does this a couple of different ways, but they saw the success that we had with our open international competition for our national memorial here in D.C. And so they wanted to add that level of complete anonymity. Anybody with an idea can bring it forward, and they'll judge it based on merit only. And they had great success. They had for a mint coin design competition. They had enormous input and selection from sources around the world, and they were very pleased with. We helped them to get the word out to the design community, and also just to veterans and to the military. And based on the submissions, they turned it into a two-stage. So they had finalists, and then the finalists submitted clay models and artwork, and they voted from those.
Very cool. And of course, the memorial that you were speaking out, the national memorial that they are working on in Washington, D.C., Saben Howard, the sculptor, renowned sculptor, working on that. We've talked to him on the show before. Really, it's been great to see this kind of crowdsourcing, as it were, for these important things to remember, such an important and landmark time period for the United States and the United States military. As we look around the country, there have been a lot of great things happening throughout the first 10 months of the year. And of course, we're not done yet. We've got quite a bit more going on. So looking at October, what are some of the big events that we have coming up around the country this month?
We have. I invite your folks to go to our calendar of events. We have one on the website ww1cc.org, and it's really in a lot of ways it's the hub for all World War I activity, or as much of it as we can help capture for stuff that's going on locally and stuff that's going on nationally. Every given day has about 100 things listed, and their exhibits, their symposia, their flag raisings, their presentations, their just a litany of different things, parades and so on, and it's all good. We don't own World War I. We just try to help foster the conversation and promote it. And some of the stuff that's going on, we just had, as we said, the unveiling of the new U.S. Mint coin. The following day, U.S. Mint also announced and unveiled the designs for companion medals for each of the five uniform services that go with the coin. So as a gift, folks can buy the coin to remember or to recognize their own service connection. And then they can also buy along with it the coin for their service. The Navy has a World War I themed image, and the Marine Corps has a beautiful World War I era EGA on that. The Mint really liked the idea of the coin, and so they kind of extended it.
That's very cool.
And then we've also got other events. And on the big one that's coming up for us is on the 9th of November, which is just a little short of 4 weeks from now. We're doing a ceremonial groundbreaking at the site of the new World War I Memorial. And that'll bring together a number of the supporters and donors and people who have been helpful with us, partners from across the spectrum. And that'll be a moment where we'll have soil from the battlefields of World War I that'll be symbolically turned as we progress forward with the plans for the memorial. We have other events as well. That's the start of, on the 9th of November, the start of Veterans Day weekend. There will mm-hmm. be a POTUS wreath laying ceremony at Arlington Cemetery at the Tomb of the Unknowns. There will also be across the country Veteran Day, which used to be Armistice Day. Events up and down the line. And so to find out what's going on in your local area, we recommend you consult our calendar. In New York City, they'll also have the big Veterans Day parade, which is the biggest one in the country. And we always have a presence there. We always ensure that maximum inclusion of not only our veterans, but also World War I reenactors and so on.
Yeah, and at the reveal of the coin, there were some World War I reenactors there, and that's something that I have a friend of mine who served in the Belgian Army, who I was in Afghanistan with. He's a reenactor over in Belgium as well, so that's something where, there are a lot of people working to keep the memory of World War I alive, because it is a modern conflict, the first modern conflict on a large scale, you could certainly say, and still, everyone who served in World War I is now gone. We lost our last last World War One veterans fairly recently. Some of them, of course, lived to be well over 100 years old, but the majority of them have been gone for quite a while. I remember there being quite a few around when I was a young boy back in the 80s, and then as the years went on, fewer and fewer of them. Now they are all gone, but there are so many people working to keep that memory alive and keep those stories alive and keep the lessons of World War One alive. And a lot of the events, when you look at the calendar, and boy, is it a full calendar. I mean, today, 11th of October, there are, I can't even count, it looks like 20, 30 different events taking place around the country. First one, North Carolina and World War One. So looking at it at that local level, that's taking place at the North Carolina Museum of History in Raleigh. Today, it's a 6,500 square foot exhibition highlighting approximately 500 artifacts. One actually right down the street from my house. So I might well, if I were feeling better and I didn't have so much to do today, I take it back. I probably won't be able to check it out. But if you're in the Laurel and Fort Meade area, Laurel's World War One, from here to over there, that's taking place today. And it looks at those who were stationed at Camp Laurel, Red Cross knitting sections, dances at the former cotton mill. The Laurel Historical Society has a new exhibit called Laurel's World War One, from here to over there, opened up in February and continuing on throughout the year. So they've got that going on. There's just so many great events taking place. My home state of Connecticut, the pivotal year, a conference on 1917. So talking about the importance that that year had in American history. That's taking place up at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. And so much more that's taking place around the country. Now, before you got involved in the Centennial Commission, of course, now you're aware of so many things that are happening. Did you know that so much was planned around the country to remember this time period before you got involved?
No, I have to say this has blossomed. This is something where so many communities saw so much need to remember these veterans. I mean, we come from a culture of, you know, you leave no person behind. And somehow, you know, along the way, there was a feeling that we left behind those 4.7 million men mm-hmm. and women who are from our tribe. They're from our people. And now there's a feeling of, which we're very fortunate to have, of remembering these folks and to honor these folks. And just to learn from their lessons and protect their legacy. And we've been trying to help with that. You know, as an organization, of course, we don't own World War One, but we try to foster. And so we have different programs to help with that. We've got education partnerships with this U.S. Military Center for Military History, the historian of the Army, just created lesson plans that were announced about a week ago. We've got lesson plans that we created with the History Channel and with the American Battle Monuments Commission. We've got other programs. One of my favorites is we have something called the 100 Cities, 100 Memorials, which we're not only building a memorial here in the nation's capital, but we, some, you know, 100 years ago, these same citizens of these towns saw a need to recognize what was done in World War One, and they created local memorials. Mm. And so many of these are in neglect. And so we've created a grant program where people can sign up to adopt, and we actually have up to $2,000 in grant money to help people restore these sites around the country.
Yeah, and it's true that there are, in the city I grew up in Stamford, there's a World War One memorial downtown, which has been kept in pretty good shape. But there are some places where those memorials have kind of, you know, fallen into a bit of disrepair. People kind of seem to have forgotten about them, as is to an extent we've seen with World War One in general, again, being eclipsed by World War Two. And, I mean, you think about the fact that for every movie about World War One, there's probably 100 movies about World War Two. And that's kind of an important way that we kind of focus on historical events and the importance of them. Well, how many movies did they make about it? How many TV shows are there about it? And of course, many more about World War II from World War One. Looking through the calendar of events at the World War One Centennial Commission website, which again is ww1cc.org. This is one that I would love to go to, were I to live somewhere near Westerville, Ohio. The Westerville Public Library is having a visit from my favorite author, Eric Larson. Eric Larson, who wrote In the Garden of Beasts, which I would submit is perhaps one of the greatest books ever written. It's a narrative nonfiction. So basically, he tells the story of things that happened in a nonfiction way by doing exhausting research. The Devil in the White City, which I hear is going to become a movie with Leonardo DiCaprio in the main role, about the mass murderer at the World's Fair of Chicago in 1893, I believe it was. His most recent book was Dead Wake, which was about the sinking of a specific cruise ship that led to the U.S. involvement in World War I, because it was traveling from the United States over to Europe and was targeted by a German U-boat. And, you know, really just so many great things happened. And people out in Westerville, Ohio, that's on October 25th, will be able to see Mr. Larson talk about his process and all that stuff. So really just an incredible amount and variety of things. That's the other thing. There are documentaries being shown. There are authors like Mr. Larson. There are so many great things taking place around the country in honor of those who served that, you know, for those who think that World War I has been forgotten, clearly it has not, because there are so many events taking place. And again, you can go to ww1cc.org. Now, Chris, a question for you. This is the centennial of the U.S. involvement into World War I. We were involved for right around a year or so. Is the end of 2017, obviously it's the end of the centennial celebration or remembrance of our entry into World War I. Does it continue on into next year at all, or is there something special planned for that?
Yeah, thankfully, Congress kept the commission alive into 2019.
Okay.
And the reason why is because American people weren't only involved in the war, but they were also involved with the peace. And in Europe, people still remember how we helped so much in recreating these shattered economies and recreating these destroyed cultures, and trying to help you know, the people rebuild, both the Germans, the Austrians, the Italians, the French, the Belgians, who were so wrecked by so many years of awful war.
Right.
And so to that end, we will stay in commission through at least the majority of 2019. We also will be participating in a major parade for Memorial Day in 2019, and that'll be kind of like a big hats off to commemorate the Memorial Day parade of 1919. Which was the one that was celebrated widely and took 3 days, actually, down Fifth Avenue in New York City, and hosted so many famous units. The Rainbow Division from New York City, which was made up of scrappy street kids from all over the country, with the American flag being carried down the Fifth Avenue by a Chinese American soldier, by the Yankee Division, which was led by down the parade by Stubby, the Sergeant Stubby, the famous mascot dog, by the famous 369th Infantry Regiment, Harlem Hellfighters, marched in that parade and famously were cheered for their incredible achievements on the battlefields, you know, overcoming not only racial discrimination, but also an armed German foe.
Right. And so much that took place over there that people don't know about, but the World War Centennial Commission is working to bring some attention to everything that took place in World War I. Again, an important time period in American history, our entry onto the world political stage. As you mentioned, the U.S. was kind of seen as the intermediary between both sides, despite the fact that we had fought on the side of the Allies. That because we didn't have the close ties and connections to the other countries over there that the European countries did, where, you know, it's fascinating when you think about all the hatred between the different nations over there, that their leaders, in essence, were all related. They were all cousins to some extent, all the kings and the emperors and all of that over in Europe. So President Wilson was seen as kind of a neutral third party, and the U.S. played a very important part in the brokering of peace towards the end of World War I, which of course happened in 11th of November, 1918. That's where Veterans Day comes from. As Chris said, Armistice Day is what it used to be known as. And really a fascinating time period that is oftentimes tied together with World War II, because a lot of the things that happened in World War I led to World War II taking place. Some of the biggest figures in World War II kind of cut their teeth during World War I. Generals Patton and MacArthur, for example, both took part in World War I. General Pershing, who was out of the military by the time World War II came around. But, you know, so many important and impressive figures that haven't gotten the spotlight on them that some of their later counterparts would. So it's really fantastic that the World War I Centennial Commission is doing that. Now, Chris, of course, if people want to find out more about the World War I Centennial Commission, where can they go? And then if they're more interested in that coin that they heard about earlier, where can they go to find out about that?
Again, the coin has all the information at usmint.gov. But then we also have a bunch of information on our own website of www.1cc.org. And again, that's www.1cc.org. I will say that we are also very active on social media. We have a social media page for Facebook that has about 20,000 followers right now. And that's, a great place to see updates, by day. We also have a very active Twitter account, and that's at the WW, the number one, and then CC. And we tweet, over a dozen times a day. We post Facebook probably a dozen times a day. So there's a lot of information out there, and we try to keep people fed with as much information as possible. Also, we do have a podcast, and myself and the podcast producer have been on the show earlier. And our podcast is available on iTunes. It's called World War I Now. And we have probably about 1,100 downloads per day right now. We've got a library of about 50 hours. So you can check out various different interesting authors, interesting historians, interesting people that are remembering military leaders and so on.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Again, an interesting subject as a history buff myself. And thank you to Chris Isleeb and the World War I Centennial Commission for all they're doing. Morning Briefing. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.